I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Sports Reporters Podcast. We welcome you to it on the start of Super Bowl week, and of course we'll get around to talking Super Bowl topics and even talking about some familiar old names on the scene, Tiger Woods and Roger Federer. But it's difficult to talk about sports these days and not begin with what's happening out at Michigan State. Not only did we see several weeks of heart-wrenching testimony from young women who have been abused by a Michigan State and USA Gymnastics doctor, but then a couple of days ago an ESPN report came out suggesting that the culture of tolerance for sexual assault issues did not begin and end with Dr. Nasser's office, but extended to the famed football and basketball programs run by Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo, both of whom rushed to microphones within hours of that report to deny the charges that were made. But it's very clear that this scandal is not going to just be about young women who are in the gymnastics or track and field or volleyball world, but into some very major sports. And it has a lot of implications, I think, not just for Michigan State, but for how business as usual is going to be run in big-time sports from here on in. What do you guys think?
Mitch, you wrote about this on Sunday. I wrote about this on Sunday. We were on parallel tracks. And the one thing that strikes me about this is that in Me Too America, I was thinking this morning, it's now Them Too America, meaning them, meaning powerful institutions like major American universities. And the whole idea of sports, which guys, sometimes seems to me to be able to talk about a world where we keep talking about building walls. There is a wall around sports sometimes that feels like the old cliche about the military industrial complex. And the idea that you can now still hide behind those walls and act as if it's business as usual, and that athletic departments and university police basically can police this stuff is for the birds. And Mitch, I you know these guys better than I do. I know Tom Izzo a little bit. I think Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo, I'm not saying they're going to lose their jobs. I think they're in a world of trouble here, and I don't know whether they're being told by lawyers not to say anything, but Tom can't continue to say that he just wants to talk about basketball.
All right. To me, I think that some of the specifics and some of the specific abuses and the major issues here that we're talking about are clearly totally disturbing, and it is self-evident that they are very, very serious topics of discussion, and that things, as Mike just said, cannot go on, should not. I underline should not. I'm not going to predict cannot go on as usual. My only contribution to this dialogue will be that this fits under my general heading, something I've been talking about and saying for decades, which is that we are the only country that does this. We are the only country, and Canada included, because it's like Division III sports, in which our institutions of higher learning routinely provide entertainment for the masses. But this America wants this. We've had this going on since the 1860s, and we love it. In vast areas of America, the college sport is the dominant sports topic in the area, not a pro sport. And this is all this transcends geography. So what we need in this country, ultimately, which we're not going to have, Bob Ryan's big fantasy, is a summit conference of politicians, college administrators, college athletic administrators, athletes who have been involved in the process, and media, and what is reasonable to expect and ask out of college sports? Because what we have now is not tenable. It's simply not. And this is only one manifestation of it.
All right. Perspective here. The whole world is talking about the Larry Nasser case. No one has seen anything like it. Even Penn State was in a different kind of category, equally horrific. But the nearly two-week-long parade of young women victims talking about when they were 12 and 13 and going into a doctor's office and having a door closed and having this guy stick his hands in places that they didn't belong and then being told that it was a medical treatment. And even this young woman who finally, she was a little older, filed the report when she came out after she told the doctor, you know, hey, what are you doing? You know, and she physically removed his hands. She filed a report and got told by the school and by the athletic authorities there that she didn't understand the difference between nuanced medicine and sexual abuse. Then they sent a separate email to the staff saying, hey, knock it off, you know, or we're going to get sued. Okay, that's right there is for this story. The story is over. They have admitted guilt in their own emails, and that is going to be the thread that pulls apart the cloak that covers this whole thing as far as Nassar lawsuits and all the rest of it, and that's going to be one story. However, that's one story. Now, what Outside the Lines has done here with ESPN has been to release another story.
Yep.
Equally serious, but totally different, and put it under the umbrella of this story. So we need, as journalists, to make sure we distinguish between a doctor who closes a door and does whatever he wants, and football coaches and basketball coaches who get the call from the campus police, hey, you better get down here. We got this thing here. You know, we think we can keep it under control. We've all heard this story a million times. And those type of incidents. Remember, it was shocking to learn that there was this kind of abuse going on in women's sports with a doctor. It is not shocking to learn that there are sexual assault problems in men's sports. My God, you'd have to have been under a rock to ignore that. So the point I want to begin with here is these are two separate stories that sometimes are trying to be pushed under the same umbrella because it's very vogue now. You know, this is the issue, and sexual assault is the issue. But they are related and unrelated at the same time. We need to begin from there. Not that they're not both serious.
No, Mitch, I agree with you. Nobody would no reasonable person would ever draw a line from Dr. Larry Nassar to the football and basketball programs at Michigan State. But it is all happening in the same institution. And I think we would agree that the four most powerful people at schools like this are the president of the school, the athletic director, and the football and the basketball coach.
The first two are gone.
The first two are gone. And all I'm saying is, you talk about closed doors. They closed the doors. Here's what D'Antonio said the other night. I received many questions and inquiries about Friday's reports and latest reports. I'm here tonight to say that any accusations of my handling of any complaints of sexual assault are completely false. Every incident reported, this is the key part here, because this to me, it gets kind of murky, Mitch and Bob. Every incident reported in that article was documented by either police, Mitch, what police is he talking about here? Or right. The Michigan State Title IX office. That's simply not good enough. It's simply not good enough. And when Tom Izzo is talking about Travis Walton, okay, who is a student assistant, whatever his title was, in the Michigan State basketball program, he was reportedly accused of raping a female Michigan State student in 1910 while serving as a student assistant, 2010, as a student assistant on Izzo's staff. Now, what he said the other day is, we'll cooperate with any investigation, always have. We've done it before, and we'll do it moving forward. That's all I'm going to say about it. And that's not all he can say about it. That's all I'm saying. And the idea that anybody outside of Michigan State cares about the power that he and the football coach hold at that school, that doesn't matter anymore.
But Bob, seen this. This is like a total culture change. This is like telling football coaches, by the way, we're not going to use helmets anymore. I mean,
what we're talking about here, though, is that, you know, I'm going to get back to my premise, is that we want this. We, the American public, you know, and vast swaths of the American public want this and want this enterprise protected because they want their games and they want their tailgates and they want their social life, which is dominated by the schools. And where's their outrage over the years? We can back this up. And all the stories over the years of what happens when someone challenges the athletic behemoth of the time, the Oklahoma City newspaper right. writers who got hounded out of town writing stuff about Oklahoma years and years ago, many years ago. All those stories that we never even heard about, you, the three of us, in smaller municipalities where someone challenged the local collegiate authority Sports Authority. This is what I'm talking about. The public outrage never existed before. Will this be the final tipping point where it might manifest itself? Let's see, because it has never done so in any significant way in the past. Look at Penn State. The reaction to people at Penn State was to circle the wagons. Period.
And to say we followed the rules, we followed the protocols. Well, those protocols clearly don't work anymore.
The protocols, you're right, Mike. The protocols have to change. The norms have to change. And I'm going to tell you what's going to change it. Penn State got sued for somewhere between $200 and $300 million, I think. Is that the figure? And Michigan State.
I think they paid out, Mitch. I think they have paid out to this point, including the $48 million fine levied on them by the NCAA, is right around $100 million.
I've read higher figures. But the average, I think, was about $3 million per case in terms of payouts. Now, Michigan State and other universities try to hide behind, like, I can't quite explain, I'm not a legal expert, but there's sort of like this indemnity that they can somehow claim that because they're a state institution or something like that, they can't be sued. All I know is that's where they're running for. And it's interesting that we have a governor's election here in Michigan this year. And a guy who's running for governor, who's a Michigan State alum, just came out 2 days ago and said, forget hiding behind this thing and just put aside $200 to $300 million, Michigan State, and you're going to have to pay this out. Now, he may be doing it to get elected governor, but he came out and made that statement. He said, stop hiding. It's the right thing to do. You're going to need $200 to $300 million. That will be the thing,
Mitch,
that will make schools have to change the
and
rules.
Mitch,
because if that's what you're looking at, then no schools are going to want.
What you were talking about is Michigan State's lawyers are already fighting these lawsuits in court, okay? And they're saying that as a, quote, government entity, end right. quote, the school does, it, just as you said, has immunity for this type of lawsuit, and that many of the lawsuits, get this now, guys, ought to get tossed because the statute of limitations has run out. You tell those young women, okay?
Yeah.
You tell those young women who we watched in a scene unlike any I can remember in my life covering sports, you tell them that there's a statute of limitations on what that guy did to them.
All right, now, but let me ask both of you this. Here's the scenario that needs to happen. You tell me if this is possible in this world. Nick Saban comes out for his Wednesday press conference at Alabama. The day before, one of his players was arrested picked up for potential sexual assault. A reporter asked a question, Nick, he doesn't have to ask a question. What happened with the player? What's happening with the program? Saban says, I need to report to you that yesterday our linebacker, Joe Jones, was arrested for sexual assault charges. A young woman charged him with inappropriate, sexual rape or whatever it is. We're going to be looking and we'll keep all these facts public. Is that going to ever happen? Because
In theory, and we're just totally talking abstract theory here, which what I'm about to say will probably put smiles on both your faces. When the school presidents who assume once and for all complete charge and are more important and have more clout and authority to order and tell Nick Saban what to do or your ass is out of here, that's when it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm smiling now because when's that going to happen?
I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the answer, though, for me. That's as simple as that. You know, we hear these talks over the years about, all this NCAA commission this and this NCAA meetings, and they're going to do this and that, and the presidents take charge. And, I mean, stop it. We know who the most important person in the state of Alabama is, and the most feared, respected, the commanding presence, whatever way you want to phrase it, and it is not the governor of Alabama or the president of the University of Alabama.
The only thing that I think can happen – The person who is accused, and this gets, in this day and age, it's very difficult. There are legal rights for the person being accused as well.
Anonymity, Mike.
No,
anonymity's not a right.
No, they're not entitled to the same anonymity as the victim. 100%, okay? And no, Mitch, in a perfect world, here's the word we keep hearing, and it's
It's almost like transparency in sports feels like an oxymoron sometimes, okay? But we keep hearing now in the defense, no, there was complete transparency. No, there wasn't. No, there wasn't. And we need more transparency in sports because I'm not saying that you get protected by sports all the time. Listen, Ezekiel Elliott didn't get protected by sports. He tried like hell to get protected by sports and right. by the law and his lawyers and wasn't in the end. But this, again, we'll circle back to what we all agree on. The idea that schools and athletic departments can be trusted to properly adjudicate this stuff is for the birds.
That's right. And I will leave it with that. I think the Ezekiel Elliott thing is a good point to end on. These programs run like professional programs in every single way. They travel like professional programs. They have facilities like professional programs. Their coaches get paid more than the professional coaches. You are able to do this in professional sports where the team manages to play the game on Sunday, even if one of the players gets arraigned on Tuesday, you know, and it's public and people talk about it and they have lawyers and all the rest of it. It's not impossible to imagine the same thing happening at a college program. It's just that these coaches, the football and basketball coaches, have gotten so used to saying, you don't get to talk to this player. You don't get to go into the dorm. You don't get to go to the training facility. You don't get to come to practice. We will control for the sake of our young men, for the sake of our young men, and they are just student athletes. We're going to keep a bubble over them. That bubble's going to have to go because you can't have the transparency that everybody is screaming about now at Michigan State. And still have that. Leave it at that.
All right. So, gentlemen, we've got many coaches who have had distinguished careers with lengthy championships, and the Bill Belichick's now spans over 17 years. But where do we think he ranks among the all-time list of such fellows who have dominated sports for various periods of time?
Well, Mitch, let me ask you this, because I want to ask about a hockey guy, because we don't talk a lot about hockey on the, I think it's Belichick, okay? And I think that for various reasons, including it all happened in the age of free agency, and a point Bob Ryan makes all the time, Mitch, is that if they win on Sunday, the first will have been in what, February of 2002?
January
of 2002, and now this one will have happened in February of 2018. Mitch, where do you put Scottie Bowman? Because Scottie Bowman, I made a list today of all the guys who you would consider to be in the GOAT conversation for managers or coaches in professional sports. Where do you put him for having done it three different places on his way to 9 Stanley Cups as a coach?
Well, that's why I would rank him higher than Belichick, because of what you just said. First of all, he went from 1972 or 3 up to 2000. I mean, he literally did it in two different centuries, okay? And he did it with those different teams. He did it with different eras, different style players. When, yep. when you can do it over four different decades, that's a lot different than winning all your Super Bowls with Tom Brady. Now, you know, Belichick had success as an assistant, with the Giants, obviously, you know, you could argue that he kind of turned Cleveland around a little bit, but then he ended up getting fired after a losing season. So the record for him is, you know, clearly a defensive mind, very, very talented, but he doesn't move into the pantheon until he gets a guy named Tom Brady to be his quarterback. You don't say that about Scottie Bowman. You can't list the number of players who have played for Scottie Bowman. And his manipulation of players, his trading for players. Remember, he was a GM in the later part of his career as well. So he had he had those powers. And so he had something to say about the players that came in, same as Belichick does now. I'm sorry, he's done more. I know hockey isn't as sexy as football, but he deserves that title ahead of, ahead of everybody in the world. You know, you got to bring in baseball and football and all the rest of it. But he deserves it ahead of Belichick in my mind.
And Bob, I mean, the three different teams, the only other guys you can kind of put in this discussion because of doing it at two different places, and one is more complicated because John Wooden did it at UCLA with different teams, okay, and yes. different players. And by the way, in a different world in college basketball. And then Phil Jackson won 6 with Michael and 5 with the Lakers and 5 with Kobe, okay? And so I think... Let me just ask this before we move on. Why doesn't Bowman come up in this conversation more often than he does? Is it because it started such a long time ago, or because it is hockey?
It's because it's hockey. There's no question about it. I don't think there's any ambiguity there. It's because it's hockey. It's number four in the American pecking order for any generic sports fan at best. And it's that. And people listening, there are people listening to us right now who are good sports fans who are being 100% educated on the existence on this earth of Scotty Bowman, let alone being able to evaluate his place in the firmament of sports coaches. So it's hockey. That's all. And, you know, the three of us have been lucky enough to be placed in areas where there is a very, you know, there's a lot of important hockey being played.
Listen, I'm looking at his record right now. I pulled it up while starting back with St. Louis in 1967, and the chart that I happen to be looking at gives you the postseason results. Once am I reading missed playoffs? Okay, 1967 to 2002, missed playoffs, and then the following year, this was Buffalo, and the following year he was fired early on into the season. The rest of the time he was at least in the playoffs. Once or twice he lost in the first round, and all the rest of them you're seeing like one Stanley Cup, lost Stanley Cup, lost in the division finals. So I know it's easy, fairly easy to make the playoffs in hockey, but once missed playoffs. I'm sorry. It's what Bob said. It's hockey, and it's not sexy, and he's not current. And you know, the spotlight is very fickle. But to return to...
He's only 84. I bet you he thinks he's current.
I see Scotty all the time. You know, he still blows through time. But Scotty's got a mind that, you know, long after he's put in the ground, his mind is still going to be working. So he'll still be making trades and shifts and things like that. But to return to Belichick, what I think you said it, Mike, in this era that he's had to deal with, there's a salary cap, and he has lost, and Bob, you could detail this better, the number of coaches and assistant coaches and coordinators that he has lost, the number of players that he has lost, would, by talent alone, fill many all-star teams, you know, and he's going to lose his two top coordinators this year. They're both being hired by somebody else, maybe a special teams coach, too. The only guy he hangs on to is Brady year after year. Everybody else is expendable.
That is what makes him remarkable. All right, 20-second timeout here. I'm glad you mentioned that. There is, in fact, a best supporting actor in this scenario.
Ernie!
And absent him, well, Ernie Adams is another his shadowy lieutenant, but I'm going to get something more direct. Absent this guy's presence the last couple of years, they would not have won last year and they would not be where they are now. There is no question about it. The unsung hero of this entire run is Dante Scarnecchia. Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach who retired 3 years ago, and after 1 year without him, they begged him to come back. And he has, to restore order in what was a shredded. Think about the Seattle Super Bowl and the line play. Yeah. And think about the line play
in the fourth quarter.
The last 2 years.
Bobby, especially in the fourth quarter when Brady was as – it will be forgotten because of what he did against the Falcons. Brady was as brilliant and had as much time as he needed in the fourth quarter of that game as he was coming back against the Falcons in the second half last year.
Yeah, so Dante Scarnecchia is the unsung hero of this, that, which we're well aware of here in New England, but people aren't. And this is a guy whose career spans back to the early 80s for various Patriot coaches. And there's the other guy. There is a guy named Ernie Adams, which is who was a Phillips Andover Academy classmate of Belichick's many years ago, and who operates in the shadows in the front office, but is his alter ego. There is another.
How much does, and by the way, Mitch, how much do you think having a guy that you have to call one of the great professional sports owners of all time, how much does that factor into the equation in New England?
Taking out the Jimmy Garoppolo trade?
Absent that.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, he gets what he wants. He gets the players that he wants. He's got, you know, money is spent when it's needed to be spent, and yet they're not They're not the Yankees, you know. They're not paying luxury taxes. They're not over the top. You really can't in the NFL. So I think that relationship is huge. You know, if you have a cantankerous or combative relationship with your owner, or your owner like Jerry Jones decides that the credit has to somehow fall on
right,
him,
right.
And you know, and you know, Kraft is not like that. Kraft sits up in the booth and yeah,
Kraft
no, am I wrong?
His lesson. As Mike well knows, given Mike's relationship
20 years ago,
Parcells, Bob Kraft has learned his lesson because, in fact, he did run off and send whatever way we want to phrase it. He sent Bill Parcells on his way. Bill Parcells said, "I had enough of this guy," and he did, in fact, in Metal, he did, in fact, thought he knew more about football than he did, and he has learned his lesson. He lets Belichick be Belichick. He would not at the time. Am I correct, Michael? Allow Bill Parcells to be Bill Parcells.
Yes. That was the famous line. You know, if you want me to cook the dinner, you ought to let me pick the groceries. Parcells has a lot of famous, you know, lines along. You are what your record says you are, and all that stuff. Okay, but that was a very famous line.
I'm going to throw one more thing out at you that I think deserves, you know, a tip of the hat to Belichick. When he loses Patricia McDaniels, that'll be the seventh time that one of their coordinators has gone on to become a head coach someplace, either in college or in the right. professionals. He has, now listen to this, he has never fired a coordinator in 16 years, mostly because he doesn't get a chance to because they go someplace else.
Right.
And he spent 3 years without an offensive coordinator and 3 years without a defensive coordinator, meaning it kind of falls on him. That's pretty impressive. You know, this is not a guy who's relying on his staff. This is a guy who makes his staff better with the possible exception of that offensive line coach that you brought up, Bob.
So, right. Never doubt that he is the smartest kid in the class and has remained and has retained that title for the last 17 years.
Okay. And if we went to the NBA, there's a fun, fair debate. We'll have it another time about Auerbach or Phil Jackson. But in the last 25 years in sports in this country, and I throw this up as to either whichever you or Bobby want to jump in first, Mitch. Where does Phil Jackson fit into this conversation with his well-documented 11 rings? He wins 6 in Chicago, and then he goes and wins 5 more with the Lakers.
I'm sorry. Right place, right time for Phil Jackson. Good coach, but he's not even in this discussion as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
Absolutely.
I think that he is in the discussion for the simple reason that in basketball, which is a different psychic animal and a different numerical animal and a different dynamics entirely than football, the ability to manipulate, handle whatever verb you want to choose, these big personalities that not everybody can do to the same extent. There are horses for courses. Phil Jackson is the guy you want with stars. There are other coaches you want with to try to make chicken salad out of chicken excrement. We have no knowledge whether Phil could do that. He never had to do that. Other coaches we know have had to do that and done it and have done it very well, and could not and would over and would were they placed in his circumstance would have gummed up the works by overcoaching. He never.
Okay, so he gets he gets credit for being a good manager and manipulating, but being a good manager of superstar talent. The chicken salad and chicken excrement guy gets no credit because he doesn't win a championship. But LeBron, I offer nothing further than this. LeBron James, wherever he goes, winds up in an NBA Finals. I can't even list the guys who have coached LeBron James in the course of the NBA anymore. If I put my mind to it, I'm sure I can remember them all. But it doesn't matter who's coaching him. He will get you to the NBA Finals, okay? Michael Jordan will get you to the NBA Finals, and Kobe Bryant and Shaq and other guys that he had will get you to the NBA Finals. So I'm sorry. I mean, I guess you can make the same argument that Tom Brady might, but football is a lot more complicated than basketball, and one player all by himself, you know, like you said, an offensive line doesn't protect Tom Brady, and you're not going. So to me, he's not in the same discussion. He's got the rings to be in the discussion, but the challenge is with the talent that he's had, and we saw what he did in New York when he was left alone to, you know, make decisions on talent, was abysmal. So I'm sorry, I don't put him in the same.
All right,
pantheon.
I got it. Let me throw in one more name. Let me throw in one more name, because he's. It's funny how certain numbers become magic numbers on their own in sports. Belichick's going for his sixth Super Bowl as a head coach. Nick Saban, his friend, just won his sixth national championship at Alabama. I think we could agree that at some point, Michael Krzyzewski is going to win his sixth national championship at Duke. And he's, and Bob, you know, the great spread from first title to last title. Coach K's got one of those going too. And
yes,
where
does he
fit into this conversation?
What was his first, Mike?
Oh, I 91. Think it was 91 when they, okay. when they wow. upset, when they upset, 20, Vegas 26, and in the semis and then
27 years already. Yeah.
And I guys, I know you guys meant, I mean, let me, I'm sorry, I have to pick up the cudgel here. You guys meant, of course, you weren't going to exit this discussion without pointing out that Connie Mack won his first American League pennant in 1904 and his final in 1931.
I think the question was about Krzyzewski, wasn't it?
Shut his mic off. Lou, shut his mic off.
I know you meant to get the Connie Mack.
Shut his mic off, Lou.
Yeah, we were going to get the Connie Mack next week. But Mike Krzyzewski, I'll throw him, now, conversely,
91. He wins his first national championship.
And, Mike, while John Wooden will always be, you know, sitting on the throne because of what he did at one school for a period of time, you cannot compare eras. When you get Bill Walton for 4 years versus whoever you get on Duke for one, and you have to keep doing this over and over now for one. And I know Duke was the last holdout to start turning freshmen into the NBA, but they are now, you know, and it's a regular routine, and he's still winning. So I take my hat off to him because you have
four
to
freshman
recruit
starters
as well
this year.
And Bob, so the one thing that you rightfully play in any prosecution / defense of Belichick's greatness, okay? So if he wins on Sunday, and we talked about this before, it will be 16 years from the first Super Bowl to the most recent Super Bowl. Krzyzewski right now had a 24-year gap between his first one and his last one in 2015. Yep. That's amazing.
It is. It is. It truly is. It is. There's no argument there.
Amazing to hold on to a job in college basketball that way. All right, Michael, there's a you know what? I'm going to talk to you about Freshly, and then you're going to take us to another topic.
What?
But first, I'm going to talk to you about Freshly. We all live busy lives, and unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done, right? Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy, no matter what life throws your way. No more worrying about having to figure out what's for dinner, and especially no mess to clean up after. Amongst the kinds of meals that you can have just waiting for you when you come home, steak peppercorn, baked penne marinara, chicken and rice pilaf, cod cake, slow-cooked beef chili, Sicilian-style chicken parm, bruschetta chicken. Do these sound like your Swanson meals? No, they do not. And that's the difference with Freshly. Their menu is created by chefs for people who want to eat healthy but are living busy lives and don't always have time to do the shopping or the cooking or the cleaning. Best part is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are super healthy as well. Customize your meals from their constantly changing menu. 30 chef-crafted options to pick from. And by the way, there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Every meal comes with a detailed and easy-to-read overview of all the ingredients. So if you're into health and you want to know what you're eating and your calories and all the rest, you get it. There's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in daily life, you got a chef-cooked dinner waiting at home. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners. $25 off plus free shipping. Here's how you do it. You go to freshly.com/sportsreporters, freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. Order today and see what life is like when you no longer have to think about dinner.
All right. There was an interesting intersection because the careers of these two men were once on parallel tracks until they weren't. And I've been looking it up this morning. I believe that a decade ago, Roger Federer and Tiger Woods were sitting on 14 majors at roughly the same time in their respective careers, okay? Federer has now gone on to win 6 more majors, the most recent yesterday against Marin Cilic in the Australian Open final, his 20th major, the first man ever to get to 20 majors. Tiger played very well in San Diego at Torrey Pines, a course that he once owned. And guys, I wrote a column about this after Federer won yesterday because I believe that he, as great as Brady is right now,
right now at this time in professional sports, Federer is the heavyweight champion of sports. And he did what he did yesterday at the age of 36, going on 37. Nothing like this has ever happened in men's tennis. And I will tell you this. Imagine what it has been like to be a tennis fan, as I am, in the same generation where we've had Roger Federer and Serena Williams, okay, whose combined record in Grand Slam singles tournaments is finals is 43-16. And to just give you one other frame of reference on Federer, okay, we'll start with him before we get to Tiger. He's got 20 majors. Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe, and Jimmy Connors combined have 26.
Wow. Well, let's also remember that Federer hasn't been doing, you know, Federer suffered his own sort of, is he getting old and is he out of it stretch. He went 4 years.
Yes.
Four years without winning a major. So what he has done in this past year, I mean, he like went to Lourdes or something. And it was a beautiful scene. And let's face it, he's an eminently more likable guy than Tiger Woods. When you watch him crying on the court and you can see how overwhelmed he was by the fact that in this past year, he's won all these majors when I'm sure he had his own doubts about himself. That just makes it more remarkable. Now, clearly, he didn't crash his own private life the way that Tiger Woods did, but he also didn't, Bob, face the physical challenges. I mean, you know, to be fair to Tiger Woods, whether they were self-inflicted, whether he's techniqued himself into it, Tiger Woods has battled a lot more physical challenges than Roger Federer.
The back thing is enormous. Yeah. We know that. Anybody that's dealt remotely with backs and anybody or covered athletes who had major backs knows how bad. But he has had injury. Federer has had something.
Oh yeah, he had
to
knee surgery.
Yeah, it had
a couple years ago.
Along the way, there were gaps where he had to not play as he recuperated, and it is remarkable. Look at Nadal. I mean, injury, and he got to the finals through the finals this time. I'm sure he was going to beat the young man, but the new fellow Korean, had the blisters, and he had to bow out in the middle of the semifinal match. But it's tremendous, and it's hard. It's a feel good story because of he is so eminently likable, as you said, Mitch.
It really is.
It's a tremendous story, and I know. I root. You know, I act. I definitely root for him in every tournament, just because he seems so worthy.
All right, think about what he's done. And again, that knee injury, that was the first significant injury of his entire career. He was having a conversation, Mitch, yesterday. He was talking to Brad Gilbert after the match. And the wonderful thing about Federer is he's more than willing to share his doubts, okay? He admitted that after the second set, which he lost in a tiebreaker, he's thinking, oh, man, maybe I'm not going to get to 20 today. I mean, when have you ever heard...
You don't hear Tiger Woods say that, no.
No, and he said the other day, he said, oh, maybe it's Tomas Berdych's day. And so he's never afraid to show his humanity. But again, think about what he's done, okay? His first major is Wimbledon in 2003. His most recent is yesterday. That means the 20 majors means 140 matches won on three surfaces across the grueling tennis year that's taken its toll on Nadal, that's taken its toll on Djokovic, that's taken its toll on Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka and other guys. And the most amazing thing he said yesterday was he thinks he's playing better now at 36 than he ever did, and they asked him where he's improved. He says, oh, I returned serve much better than I did 10 years ago. So he
echoes of Brady there.
He thinks, he thinks he's getting better.
Wow. I mean, Brady's a better player than he was 5 years ago. There isn't any question about it.
Yeah, but Brady has a bunch of big guys blocking in front of him. Federer,
no, I know, but
Federer's
I'm saying,
got a net, you know. And if you had to pick back when these two, when Tiger Woods and Federer were neck and neck, Which sport would you have thought you would have had more longevity in?
We've talked, Mitch, you know we've had this conversation for years on this podcast and on the Sports Reporters. If somebody had told you that on the golf course on which he played yesterday and beat Rocco Mediate in a dramatic U.S. Open in 2008, and he won his 14th major, and he was at the time 32
he's moving up on 32 years old, okay, that he would never win another major. I'm not saying he's never going to do it. I don't think he is, but he may, okay? But if somebody told you everything that was going to happen to him was going to happen, you would have had that person drug tested.
Yeah. Well, so now what do we make of you know, it's so interesting to, I have a whole separate sport. It's the sport of watching the media watch Tiger Woods. That's its own sport, you know, because for years, and, you know, I mean, we can say this now, for you on the sports reporters, if Tiger Woods burped, it got to the lead of the sports reporters. We had a producer who was just in love with any Tiger Woods story. Maybe it, I don't know, maybe the ratings showed that when we talked about him, whatever. I always felt that we overdid it. And I certainly feel that the press overdoes Tiger Woods as anything. So now he lasts. This is the new story. He lasted 4 days in a tournament. He couldn't hit a fairway to save his life, but he lasted 4 days in a tournament, and this is a good sign for him coming back. What do you guys make of what he did over this weekend?
All right. I'm not going to start. My son's constantly, you know, get ready to fit him for a green jacket every time he gets up and down from a greenside bunker. Okay. So my sons are very invested in watching Tiger come back. And obviously, if you're a sports fan, it would be great to see him win again. There were encouraging things this weekend. And as Bob Herrick wrote in ESPN and what I saw with my own eyes, because I watched a fair amount of this over the last 4 days, he grinds as much as he ever did. As great as he was a grinder. Mitch, I remember times when he was in his prime, man, if there was even in danger of missing a single cut and he had to make like three birdies and four holes on Friday, he'd make three birdies. He got up and down all weekend. He drove the ball all over Southern California. He did. And to me, it's the one concerning factor, because even in times when he has had comebacks over the last years, he has been as yippy with his driver as golfers sometimes can be with short putts. And if you can't drive the ball in the fairway in the modern world of golf against these young bruisers, you're not going to win. But there was a moment yesterday when he got it to 5 under par early. And Mitch, when you're talking about the media, the giddiness with any success he gets on television, it's like, you know, the announcers are saying, you know what he's thinking. If he can get to 8, if he can get on the first, Mitch, it happened. I saw it happen yesterday. If he can get on the first page of the leaderboard.
If he can just have 6 eagles in a row, he could be right back in this thing.
But the bow I'll put around this, and I don't know what you guys, I actually was encouraged, but not giddy by what he saw, because when I kept watching the tournament after he went home yesterday, and when you see the way a guy like Jason Day, okay, who hasn't won in 20 months, hits golf balls and where he hits them and the shots he hit under pressure in the playoff yesterday, you think, man, this game has changed while Tiger stopped being Tiger.
Well, for the longest time during his reign, there were just no serious challenges. And a generation came and went, right? I called it, Mike, I called it the Charles Howell generation. And they came and went. And now this new one has arrived that obviously is a different order entirely. I think the conclusion I drew from this is that I will now, for the first time in this new second phase of Tiger's career life, allow for the possibility of him winning a tour event, a generic tour event. I still that's a step forward. I'm still not prepared to in any way put him in contention in a major, but I can see this, that game, if he hits, you know, a few more fairways, but that's a big if. Maybe he never will, I don't know. But the short game was jaw-dropping at times, and the putting was excellent, and he did grind it out, as you say. I remember during his reign, Mike, what I always used to harp on, obviously he's winning majors, but it was the never missing the cut thing. Everybody else Smith's cuts.
Right, right.
Everybody. Right. Phil, Duval when he was Duval, Vijay when he was the guy, on and on and on and on. They all missed cuts, but Tiger didn't miss a cut. It was an enormous story when he finally missed a cut. So it was just, that's in that sense, and we, you know, I know you love Jack, and Jack is still the greatest, but in that sense, there was never anything like him and never will be.
All right.
Wait, one more thing about Tiger. Okay. Just let me put this in, okay, and then we'll move on to party shots, okay? He will turn 43 years old in December. The math on over 40 golfers is pretty dramatic. I think Vijay Singh might have won the most PGA Tour events after the age of 40. Jack won 3 majors after his 40th birthday. 3. He won two majors at the age of 40, the year he turned 40. And then obviously he won the Masters in 1986, his most famous victory. He was saying the other day that he told me the other day, he said, that's the one that people want to tell you where they were when it happened. Okay. Yeah. There's two things math wise working against Tiger. Okay. The amount of surgeries he has had in, oh, by the way, a non-contact sport, and his, dare I say, biological clock.
All right, speaking of clocks, ours is about done. Time for our parting shots. Bob Ryan, lead us off.
It's late January. The pitchers and catchers report in 3 weeks or so. Do you know where your baseball free agents are? Home sitting by the phone, that's where. So what the hell's going on? And you can't blame it all on Scott Boras as much as some baseball people would like to. The money is there. Baseball just received a $33 million windfall when Disney purchased an MLB media streaming company, and the new lower corporate tax rate benefits the owners for sure. So, is it possible this is a mass scheme to make panicky players sign one-year deals rather than long-term contracts? Some people think so. You know, and I know, the GMs and the managers can't be happy. They have holes to plug. Now, somebody must want J.R. Martinez and his 45 homers, or Logan Morrison and his 38 bombs, or Jake Arrieta, or Yu Darvish, or the more than 100, I'll repeat that, 100 other free agents of varying degrees of usefulness. This is yet another example of Bob's Law. Regarding owners in all sports. Pay attention, guys. Bob's Law on owners. You can't trust any of them farther than you can throw the stadium or the arena. Always remember that.
Well, I referenced it just now, a long conversation I had with the great Jack Nicklaus the other day. And you wonder sometimes in this time when we do talk as much as we do about goats in all the sport, what's the thing, the chip, the quality that unites them all? There was Bill Russell, and there was Michael and Brady and Federer and Serena. And as I pointed out today, Fed and Serena only have won 43 singles majors so far. Same tennis generation, one that they both believe is still going. So I was talking to Jack, the go-to golf, now and for all times, and he had a brief and telling insight, I thought, into who he is, as much of a figure of grace and modesty and excellence as he's been across nearly 60 years on the public stage. And I told him about being at St. Andrews in 1978 and how I was excited because I was going to see Jack Nicklaus win the British Open at the home of golf, except with three holes to go, I said, you were going to lose to this unknown New Zealand guy named Simon Owen. And there was a pause at the other end of the phone, and quietly Jack said, I wasn't going to lose to Simon Owen. Federer wasn't going to lose to Marin Cilic yesterday in Australia. Goat's going to do what goat's going to do.
What a great line. I wasn't going to lose.
I wasn't going to lose to Simon Owen.
Vince McMahon's announcement that he was forming a new XFL actually came last week, but we're just getting around to saying something about it, which pretty much tells you how seriously most people are taking it. McMahon announced he was starting a rival football league as he did once before, but this time he was going to be smarter. This time he was going to own all the teams. That's right, one owner, eight teams. That'll work. Oh, and that owner, McMahon, would not allow any player with as much as a DUI on his record to be in the league. And all players must stand for the national anthem. So far, he's got a league of Tim Tebow. No TV contract yet, no cities, but McMahon of pro wrestling fame does promise shorter games, 2 hours on average. And actually for McMahon, that could be very doable since he won't have any commercial sponsors. By the way, Johnny Manziel seemed excited by the idea and tweeted a shout out to McMahon. Manziel, of course, wouldn't come close to playing under the new XFL's good behavior rules, but hey, maybe he wanted to buy season tickets. Good luck, Johnny. That's going to wrap things up for today. We will be back here on Friday. We do this podcast every Monday and Friday. And, of course, this Friday we'll be heading into Super Bowl weekend. And we'll be joined by Dale Arnold from WEEI in your backyard there, Bobby, to talk about the New England Patriots as well. So if you enjoyed what you heard, please leave a review. Tell your friends. They can download the podcast on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or any place you get your popular podcast. And until then, with Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.